From Politico, this is Women Rule, where we bring you real talk with women bosses. I'm Anna Palmer, senior Washington correspondent and co-author of the Politico Playbook. Just before the midterms, we're bringing you this special episode on minority women in Capitol Hill offices. You're probably aware by now, especially if you're a regular listener of this podcast, that the upcoming election could alter the gender makeup of Congress. There are a record number of women running for office and a record number of minority women. So with this potential new wave of women coming to Capitol Hill, we ask the question, what about their staffers? They're the backbone of congressional offices, the legislative assistants, the communications directors, the chiefs of staff. And women's representation in these offices matter too. So in this live Women Rule podcast taping, which we recorded at the Wings DC offices some weeks ago, we talked to two minority women, two chiefs of staff. We asked them about their paths to Capitol Hill, what it took to get them there, and the challenges they've faced since. We sat down with Natalie Armijo, Chief of Staff for Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham, a member of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. And we talked with Karen Street, Chief of Staff for Representative Karen Bass, who's also a part of the Congressional Black Caucus on Capitol Hill. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York made a special appearance to tee up the entire day. We had Rhonda Fox, Chief of Staff to Representative Alma Adams, set the stage. Stay tuned for those conversations. On the podcast, we'll be bringing you real talk with women bosses, asking how did you make it, and what advice would you give a woman looking to lead? If you're a fan of the show, please subscribe to Women Rule on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us and leave a review. And please share our episodes on social media and follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @APalmerDC. Women Rule is produced by Politico in partnership with our founding partners, Google and the Tory Burch Foundation. This episode is brought to you by our supporting sponsor, Chevron. When more girls go into science, technology, engineering, and math, the whole world benefits. With support from families, schools, policymakers, and businesses, girls can do remarkable things with STEM. Chevron is proud to join Women Rule in empowering the next generation of female leaders.
Hello, ladies. I want to start out by thanking you so very much for coming to today's event. It means a great deal to myself and to all of the women chief of staffs of the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Before we begin, though, I do want to say thank you to the Wing for hosting us in your beautiful facility. We are so honored to be here. And we are here today to continue fostering our new women's network, because that is who we are. And we will be just as strong as that old boys club of Capitol. I want to introduce, I'm going to do my best not to get emotional today, but there are some women that will be speaking before you today that mean so much. Because if I looked around this room, I could tell you we would not be here today if I did not run into this person. And that person opened the door for me. She kicked it down. She empowered me. Not only did she give me my first job as an unpaid intern and really saw the desperation in my eyes and said, get that girl a paycheck. And brought me into her team, but she empowered me. But it's not just that you gave me that opportunity. I've now worked for five other women. You have answered the call to support those women. You've given them checks, you have hosted events for them, you've uplifted your staff at those events who work for those women, and that is something that is pure. And being here today means more than I can ever explain. So I'm so proud to be a woman behind this woman. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
It's a great deal of thanks, Gerardo. Thank you for imagining this event, for creating this event, for wanting to introduce me to some amazing women who work in all of these amazing places throughout Washington. Thank you, Rhonda, for having that vision and being able to have the leadership to bring all of us together to do great things together. So thank you for you and everything that you stand for. I'm so grateful for our friendship and for all that you will do in the future. So a round of applause for Rhonda, please. So I had a brief moment to walk around the room to talk to most of you about what you're working on, what you're doing, what you care about. And what I have to say is I'm really inspired. I'm inspired by your advocacy, the fact that you are working on every issue that I care about, whether you're working on electing more women to Congress, whether you're working on early childhood education, whether you're working for some amazing members of Congress to make sure they can do good things and they are the right side of the right issues every time. Every single one of you who is an advocate, who is trying to make this world a better place, I'm very grateful to you. And in this moment that we're in, it's very stark. I mean, we have a president who continues to divide this country, who is racist, who is sexist, who attacks group after group because of their background, who they love, where they're from, what they have as a religion. And I have to say, we are the antidote to that. We are the ones who will stand strong and protect anyone or any group or any people that are being maligned or undermined or harmed by this president. And we have to. It is a moment for all of us. It's a moment in time when I believe each one of us is called to make a difference. Each one of us is hearing a voice inside us saying, I have to do something. It was interesting. I went to church this morning, and the message from the sermon was that there is a role for all of us, and it doesn't matter what it is. It can be the smallest role, it can be the biggest role, it could be the most insignificant role to you, but perhaps the most significant role for the future of America, or the future of your community, or the future of your family, or the future of this country. And so all of us have to know this moment is for us. And it doesn't matter what our role is, it matters that we are willing to play that role. We are willing to do that work. We are willing to climb that hill. We are willing to climb that mountain. And so don't give up. Don't ever believe that what you're doing or what your voice is or what your views are or your values are aren't important, because they are. And they actually might make the difference between winning or losing. It might make the difference between flipping the House of Representatives or flipping the U.S. Senate. So thank you for what you're doing. I stand ready to help you, and I will help you. So thank you so much for being here, and thank you for including me.
We are going to get started. So sitting next to me, thank you, ladies, so much for being willing to come up and talk. I know everybody is going to get a lot out of this podcast. I have Natalie, who is Chief of Staff for Representative Lujan Grisham. And I have Karen, who is Chief of Staff for Karen Bass from California. And so when Rhonda and I were talking about doing this podcast at a happy hour, I think it came up. She was, you know, you really got to do this. We got to do something around this. I was like, all right. But what we were talking about is kind of the women behind the women and how that bond for people, for women who are chiefs to other women, can sometimes be a little bit different. It's a different relationship. And so we're going to kind of try to explore that a little bit. But I think one of the things that most people, and I find the most interesting to ask and just kick it off, is everybody wants to know, how did you get there, right? It's hard. You're in Washington. It's very male-dominated, very, you know, white male-dominated on the Hill. And both of you have pretty interesting stories. I'm going to start with you, Karen, because you actually got your start with a Republican.
I did. That is true. So I just want to say thank you to Rhonda. Thank you, Anna. Thank you, Senator Gillibrand. I mean, it is honestly an honor to be in the room with so many phenomenal women. And I myself am going to try not to get emotional. I've only ever been on the Hill. I have been on the Hill for over a decade. And over that time, there have been so many women who have poured so much into me. So I'm just really grateful to be here to have this opportunity and share my experiences. So yes, I am from Stone Mountain, Georgia. Anyone? Okay.
Oh, yeah,
thank you. Okay, all right. So I'm from Stone Mountain, Georgia. I went to Howard University. All right, HU. Okay. In probably true Howard form, my last semester I found out I needed an internship to graduate. And I happened to be dating a guy who did IT on the Hill at the time. I had honestly never thought about being on the Hill. He was just like, oh, like, I know the IT guy in Isaacson's office, Senator Johnny Isaacson. And so he passed along my resume. I ended up coming in for an interview and I got the internship. I interned there my last semester and then I rolled into a staff assistant position. And I did that for about 6 months before I transitioned into Harry Reid's office, which made for probably the most awkward exit interview ever. And then, you know, that was June of 2008. I don't know if you all remember June of 2008, but the economy was a hot mess. And I came in as an LC working on banking, business, and housing issues. And by working on, I mean writing the letters to like very sad people who had lost everything. And that was really hard to do. I didn't really understand what a foreclosure was, but it forced me to learn the issue, and it actually, kind of in a sad way, created a lot of space in that portfolio for me to move up. And so I actually was constantly helping the senior policy advisor, who was a white man, a lovely white man, but you know, constantly helping him with everything. And my letters were sacrificed because it's like, well, if it's a choice between giving the Senate Majority Leader, you know, the total liability of the Federal Reserve, you know, in a bailout program or writing a letter, you tend to focus on the former. And so I actually got really pissed off in a letter, in a, like a mail meeting, because I kept getting in trouble for not working on my letters. And so I walked into our deputy chief's office and said, you need to create an aide position and you should put me in it. And he said no. And it was a lesson in terms of kind of building your power structure. I had to go to that senior policy advisor and enlist his support and the support of a lot of the women in the office. And through that, about 6 months later, I was able to move up to ledge aide. And I was able to take on his portfolio when he left to be a CFTC commissioner. And then I was able to basically rise up to senior policy advisor. From there, Senator Reid decided he was going to retire. And so, you know, I was in the middle of law school. I went to GW Law at night because I figured, you know, I was trying. Thank you.
You weren't busy enough as it was.
I just decided, why not? No, I had always wanted to go to law school, but I was traumatized by the recession and I was terrified to leave a good job to go to law school to try to get a good job. So I decided to just go to law school at night. And then he announced he was retiring basically right in the middle of law school. That totally rocked my world. I was with him for 8.5 years. I was so blessed and fortunate to have that opportunity. And when he retired at the same time that Trump was elected, it pushed me into a really uncomfortable space. I knew that that was going to happen. I knew that I had been very comfortable and that I was going to go through a period of transition, and I'm still in it, quite honestly. I left Reid's office and went to the CBC, which I'm very grateful for, because CBC held me down. Like, when no one else would answer my calls, CBC came through. I served them. They did. They really did. And I came on as policy director, and that's a 2-year gig. And so I knew that I had 2 years to bust my butt and create a platform for me to get to the next level. And I decided that if I was gonna stay on the Hill, it would only be for chief. And so I started telling everyone, like, yeah, I might stay on the Hill, but it's only gonna be for chief. And in about February of this year, I started having conversations with Karen Bass, Representative Karen Bass of LA, because she was looking for a new chief. And it was just a series of events and questions and demands and just speaking truth to power that put me in this position now. And so I've been with her for 5 months as chief of staff.
I want to get to Natalie's story because it's also very interesting. But I want to ask those questions. I think a lot of times when we think about those conversations you're having as you're trying to figure out, like, am I a good fit for her? Is she a good fit for me? Mm. And putting yourself out there to say, like, I'm going to be the chief. Like, I'm not going to just be a lateral move.
Right.
Take us like a little bit behind the scenes as much as you can in terms of what was that like?
Honestly, I, when I knew I was gonna leave Reid's office, and it's like a mindset that I just kind of formed, I decided that I would have kind of goals and guidelines, but that I would be open to anything. And I would always have a conversation, because you never know where a conversation is going to lead you. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to take time to talk to a member of Congress, because even if it doesn't work, it's still a relationship. But I decided to just be totally honest with her. Like, I never lied about anything. I never, like, oversold myself. I was just honest about who I was as a person, what my strengths were, what my weaknesses were. And it just so happened that we aligned. And the things that, you know, Karen Bass is an amazing woman. She's a community organizer. She's not your typical politician. And she has this kind of, it's not even outside the box. In her mind, there is no box, right? And that's her existence. And mine is, I've only ever worked on the Hill. And so, like, I'm an institutionalist. And so we balance each other in that way. And so to me, it was just being honest. And if it didn't work, I was totally okay with that. But it did.
Well, that's great. All right, Natalie, you had a different kind of path. Talk to us about, so you're in New Mexico.
Yes.
Not in politics either.
No, so my story, and also I'll just say thank you for having me here today, and thank you, Rhonda, for asking me to be up here in front of all these wonderful women. I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I met the congresswoman there, and I kind of helped out on her 2012 congressional campaign by knocking doors and making phone calls, however I could help, and I sort of built a relationship with her then chief of staff. And she had also at the time encouraged me to be an Emerge New Mexico candidate. So I applied for that program and I went through that program and graduated in 2012. So I'd always been kind of interested in politics and maybe potentially running for office one day. But at the time I was working in business, I was working for a national laboratory in New Mexico, so it was totally out of my realm. In 2015, her chief of staff contacted me and said, hey, would you think about moving to DC and working for the congresswoman as her scheduler? And I was like, what? A scheduler? What is that? You know, that doesn't, I don't think that's something I'd like to do. you know, I have a house and dogs, like, no. But side note, scheduling is really hard. So shout out to all the schedulers out there. The hardest job on the hill. So, you know, after some thought on paper, it didn't sound right, but I was kind of intrigued, and I think I, being from New Mexico, I always wanted a little bit more, and so I was like, maybe this is my chance, and, you know, you don't really get the opportunity to move to Washington, D.C., and especially work for a member of Congress. So three weeks later, I packed my bags, I sold all my stuff, I rented out my house, and I was on an airplane with two suitcases and my dogs, and I remember this moment. It was Mother's Day weekend, and I was in my studio apartment, no furniture, on an air mattress, and I was crying, and I was like, what did I do? I don't know anyone here. But looking back, that was the best decision I ever made, and I took a chance on myself and a risk. Nothing is ever, you know, permanent. You can always go back home. I love this city, I love what I do, and after working my butt off for 2.5 years, last October I had the opportunity to potentially be Michelle's chief, and I put myself in front of her every day for 3 months trying to prove myself, and here I am, and never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd be sitting here. So, yeah.
Okay, we have to unpack this a little bit more, because on the phone, when we were discussing this, you basically, you knew the chief was gonna go back to New Mexico because she's running for governor. Mm-hmm. And you kind of, you put yourself out there, and I mean, talk about that though, right? Like, you were copying people on emails and trying to make, like, prove yourself while doing your current job.
Yeah, so that was the longest job interview of my life. It was 3 months, and I knew when Dominic, our chief, was leaving, I was like, I want that job. And that's my job, I want it so bad. So every day, I put myself in front of her, and she literally told me at the end when she offered me the position, I couldn't get rid of you, because she wasn't going to. But you know, I asked the Ledge team, copy me on everything you're sending out. I put myself, I inserted myself everywhere I could. I gave feedback. I did any, even if I didn't know what I was talking about, I said something. So that was really important, and it all paid off. And I will say too, this is sort of off the topic a little bit, but I'm really into yoga and trying to take care of myself because working on the Hill is really hard and it's a stressful job, so we all need to try to take care of ourselves. But I would try to visualize myself in that position because, you know, there were days where I was like, there's no way I can do this job. I'm not ready. I don't have the experience. And I think as women, we often have that negative self-talk. So you have to bring it back and use your support network and tell yourself, no, you can do it. So I'd set my intention in yoga and say, you know, I'm the chief. I'm going to do this. And I did. And so I just kept me focused.
Our conversation continues after a word from our supporting sponsor, Chevron. When more girls go into science, technology, engineering, and math, the whole world benefits. With support from families, schools, policymakers, and businesses, girls can do remarkable things with STEM. Chevron is proud to join Women Rule in empowering the next generation of female leaders.
I want to talk, shift gears a little bit about kind of what's happening on the Hill. Obviously, today's audience and the size is evidence of the number of women and the number of women of color that are coming up in the ranks. But it's still largely an old boys club. There's a lot of, you know, kind of men in power. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, how you guys have navigated that. Have you had tough moments where, you know, I mean, we've all had them, right? Where either microaggressions or somebody discounts you because you're a woman or thinks you're the person who's answering the phones and not the chief of staff.
Go
Karen.
Ahead.
Well, okay. Karen's nodding for the listening audience.
So these views are all my own. I'm supposed to start with that. But I'm going to be honest. I was in the Senate for a long time before I came to the House. And what I've noticed is that when I was in the Senate, I think there was a bit more political correctness. And so I actually didn't have as many issues with those microaggressions. I mean, the kind of silver lining about being the only black person in the room is that people are afraid to piss you off. They don't want to be accused of being racist or, and like, you know, Reid's office was actually a very like woman dominated, like a lot of the higher levels were women. And so I didn't really have that issue. I've had more issues when I came to, when I left Reid's office. And I think a part of that is also like, DC is this type of transactional city where a lot of times your identity is tied to where you work. Like people will ask you who you work for before they ask you where you're from or what your name is. And so I think that there was this shield that I had being a senior staffer of the Senate Majority Leader. And then when I left that bubble, that was when it was like, okay, now you really have to hustle. And I wasn't ready for that at all. I think, you know, there were definitely times where men, and not white men, men of color, would say very inappropriate things to me. And it was, I had never had that experience after being on the Hill for almost a decade. And it was, it's uncomfortable, but I remember the first time I checked a guy on it, and it felt so good. And every time I see him, he's terrified. And it's like, good, you won't do it again. So I think it's like, it is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to have to tell the truth sometimes, but I think it's when you get past that discomfort and just like put up your boundaries and fight for them, you feel extremely empowered, and you just watch the next time you see that person how the dynamics have changed.
For me, that is my favorite. This happened last week. I was talking with this group in the lobby of our office. They said, oh, let me get your card. So I gave them, you're the chief of staff. Yes, I am. I'm the chief. And so I think a lot of times people just assume you're not in that type of position. But I think for me, some barriers that maybe I've faced goes back to what the senator was saying. When I'm making a decision and someone or a male comes to you and says, no, that's not the right decision. And there have been times where I've let someone sway me into making a different decision and I was right. And so you have to really stick to your guns and trust your intuition and your gut. So I think that's really important as a woman in an office. Don't let people discount you or make you think that you're not right or you're not smart enough or you know you don't have the knowledge to make those decisions.
Let's talk a little bit about working for a woman member of Congress and that relationship that you have. Kind of, you guys are the women behind the women. What's it like? Is it kind of, talk a little bit about it.
For me, I love my boss. If you've never met my boss, Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham, she's running for governor of New Mexico. She is feisty and she's all of 4'10", I think, you know, and she wears these high heels. And I'm really fortunate to work for her because she's such a strong Latina role model that every day she pushes me to be better and to be a better leader. I mean, every day there's something and she pushes me to do it. And something I also really like about her is that she's herself. She's authentic. And she uses humor and the way she dresses. And for me, you know, I think as women, sometimes you think, oh, I have to be buttoned up or I have to be this certain person in order to be successful and professional. And that's not true. So I think she's really taught me to be myself and that I'm good enough as myself. And I think you're even better when you are yourself.
I had only ever worked for men before coming to Brett Bass's office. And the thing that I've noticed and that I've appreciate so much is that she actually asked me about myself, like my personal life. Like she checks in with me and says, how are you feeling? And how do you think this is going? And she asked me about my boyfriend. And she thinks that we're already, she's like asked me several times, like, oh, when's the wedding? And it's like, no, we're not there yet. she actually takes like a, she actually takes like a personal interest in me mm-hmm. that in a way that I don't think any of the men I've ever worked with have either thought to do or felt comfortable doing because they don't want to pry and seem like they're crossing a line. And so it's really nice to have that, to be able to build that type of relationship with her where, you know, she's actually looking out for me as a young Black woman and trying to build me up and empower me.
I want to talk about having more women in positions of power and why that matters. The senator kind of mentioned why having more women lawmakers, why that could be a good thing. What, from your guys' perspective, why is it important for there to be more women in senior positions and more women of color in those positions?
I think that it's important to have more women and more women of color because I generally believe that you should have diverse perspectives. And I think that we as women and as women of color who are progressives, I remember 2008, and I remember what it was like to have earmarks and bipartisanship, and I'm really sad that we've lost a lot of that, and I worry that our institutions won't get back to what they used to be. I pray they will, but I think that I generally celebrate having diverse racial backgrounds, diverse genders, diverse political beliefs, diverse socioeconomic status, because it is that consensus that you build that has a better informed reality. Like we all have different realities. Like my experience is different from yours, is different from yours, even though we're all women. And so I think that, you know, aside from the many wonderful things that Senator Gillibrand said, which are all, I believe, totally true, I generally think that we have to, we should push our institutions to be representative of what America is, which is a melting pot of lots of different beautiful tapestries.
Well, I'll say, you know, my boss always says this too, that it's proven that women just get more done. You know, it's proven that women get more done and together we can be successful and get more done. And so I think that we definitely need more women and women of color in leadership positions in our office. And I've seen even Alma Acosta, she's the executive director of the CHC in our office, and she works her tail off every day, and she represents people from her community, and so I think everybody needs a voice from their community. So it's to have diversity in the halls of Congress is definitely needed.
So we're gonna get the hook here in a few, but I want to ask both of you, kind of put the question to you, is like, what piece of advice? You have all these women here, we're in a room of women lifting up other women. What piece of advice would you give, you know, all of these people that you think could help?
My advice would be, and I've sort of mentioned this, is to take a chance. Take chances on yourself. Don't doubt yourself and work hard. You know, you never know if you take an opportunity what's going to present itself. And someone told me once when I left my last job, he was a chief of staff for the lab director, and he told me, you know, sometimes opportunities like this, they rarely come around. And if you say no, they likely won't ever come around again. But if you do say yes and take these opportunities, it then opens so many more doors. So take opportunities. Don't doubt yourself. Like I said, you know, stand your ground, stick to your guns, and work hard. You know, nothing is beneath you. Make calls, make copies, whatever it is. I mean, even I do that in my job, and I think it's important because people really notice the hard work that you do. And it just shows that you're proactive, and I worked my butt off for Michelle, and I think she took notice of that even back when I was campaigning for her in 2012. And so just work hard.
I want to underscore the work hard and that nothing is beneath you, because I'm going to be honest, and I hope I don't offend anyone. I have noticed I think sometimes there's a generation of young folks who come to the Hill who grew up under the Obama era, where we like thought we could do everything, and like the world was actually really changing, and they kind of all get this sense that like you can, you know, you should just come on the Hill and like, even though you've never worked on the Hill, be chief of staff, and like, you know, I can never be, you know, a scheduler. But like, it's, nothing should be beneath you. Like, you should take every opportunity. But one thing I will say to kind of balance that is something that I actually learned on a panel with Keenan a month or two ago, I don't know, where I actually felt I was challenged and pushed to another level, because I'm a, you know, Southern Christian woman raised to like, you know, speak when spoken to and be very humble and blah, blah, blah. And I do think that there's been a long time where I've fallen into this trap where we get caught up in like, oh, public service, it's such an honor to be a public servant, and, you know, don't rock the boat, and don't do, you know, you should just be so lucky to be here. And it's like, yeah, it's great to be here. Not everyone can be here. It is a privilege and an honor, but that doesn't mean that you are less valuable. That shouldn't come at the expense of you saying, hey, I think I deserve a raise right now. Or, hey, I'm putting myself in front of you because I want to be chief of staff. Or, hey, you keep yelling at me about letters. It's because you need an aide position and you should put me in it. So being willing, in balance to your humility and your willingness to do all the work, also fighting for yourself in that process and demanding what you know you have earned.
So thank you all so much. Thank you so much for doing that. We really appreciate it.
Women Rule is produced by Rena Flores. Dave Shaw is our executive producer, and our booker is Jessica Andrews. If you're a fan of the show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave a review. It helps new listeners find the show. And one last thing, if you have any thoughts about who we should feature on Women Rule, let me know. Tweet me at @apalmerdc. And of course, hit that subscribe button. And thanks for listening.